You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Charlie Zimmerman. Here's The Ground Floor with Cynthia Schur.
You're listening to The Ground Floor on Jefferson Public Radio, where we talk with regional entrepreneurs about their businesses and how they got started. I'm your host, Cynthia Schur, and today I'm speaking with Tim Kiesling, who is the co-owner of Acid Castles Vintage in Ashland, along with his partner, Marcus Keppel. So, Tim, Acid Castles Vintage, brand new store, grand opening just recently. How did you get started in the vintage business?
Well, when I was attending college at University of Puget Sound up in Washington, there was a vintage store right next to campus that I just absolutely fell in love with. Just the clothes, the music they were playing, like all the employees looked really cool. And it just became like my kind of home away from home on campus and where I made a lot of connections. So it started there. And I started doing wholesale to them. So I would go out and find a bunch of stuff and then just sell it to their store. And then when I graduated from college, I continued doing that to stores around the Pacific Northwest and then moved to Brooklyn for a couple years, and I did vintage markets there. And it was always kind of a dream to have a brick-and-mortar store of my own so I could recreate that feeling and that sense of community that I found when I was in college. And August 31st, we opened Acid Castles Vintage.
Awesome. And so unless you grew up in Ashland, you might not catch the reference to Acid Castles. Can you just tell people like, okay, why did you name it that? And where does that come from?
Well, Acid Castles is a collection of extremely large granite boulders above Lithia Park. And it's a place where I spent a lot of time in high school. And it was like a gathering place where there wasn't the parental supervision, that you might find at home. And it was definitely, it was a cool place to go.
Okay.
And definitely very Ashland.
Yes.
And in the name, we wanted something that reflected the local character of Ashland. And, you know, there's so many, you know, Bear Creek, this Grizzly Peak, you know. So Acid Castles, I think, fit our brand really well.
Great.
And was important in my adolescence.
Got it. So it sounds like you started out like sourcing inventory for this store in Puget Sound, was it?
Mm-hmm.
In Puget Sound. And so you got to get wound up with a feel for not only what they would buy, but what their customers would buy. So tell us a little bit about what is a customer of a vintage store looking for? Who are they and what are they looking for?
I mean, there is such a huge breadth of people who are into vintage, and it really is a global market. I mean, there's definitely lots of young people who are looking for cool graphic t-shirts, but then there's a slightly older demographic who, you know, are more interested in like 1930s and 40s dresses. And then even in the Pacific Northwest, we get a lot of Japanese people who are coming here specifically to source clothes for their stores back in Tokyo. And so they can obviously command a much higher price because it's not like anyone can go out to a thrift store and find American vintage in Japan.
Right, right. So vintage is a category unto itself. You know, can you explain the difference between what makes something vintage, what makes something antique, and what's just old clothes?
Right. Well, I think the kind of boilerplate industry standard definition is 20 years or older is vintage. 100 years or older is antique, often gets thrown around. But within vintage, there are things that are more desirable and worth essentially nothing. So pieces that can be used in modern wardrobes and modern styling that don't come across as costumey are usually the more sought-after pieces. But
give me a couple of examples.
Vintage Levi's, they're definitely like a perennial, never go out of style item. Old biker jackets, single stitch t-shirts, particularly like Harley Davidson t-shirts, really like a lot of the classic Americana stuff is what we look for.
And then I assume you're looking for the collector who's been waiting for that particular item in some of your, you know, things that you're buying. I think you were telling me about Nirvana t-shirts, that there's like a whole different category of concert t-shirts that go from really different price points. Tell me a little more about that.
Oh, yeah. So Nirvana t-shirts are a very hot item. And there are certain t-shirts that are essentially the same. Just glancing over them, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But there are subtle differences in the tags and slightly different colors that make them more or less valuable. And so two seemingly identical t-shirts could be either worth like $800 or $5,000. And already $800 is a pretty astronomical price for a t-shirt. So people are very serious about their t-shirt collecting.
I guess so. $800 strikes me as just a, you know, that's a fortune to spend for a t-shirt.
Truly. I mean, that's like practically a used car.
So. Yeah, it practically is. That's right. So what distinguishes Acid Castles from, you know, Ashland has a lot of resale stores or upscale retail. And, you know, what distinguishes Acid Castles from the other stores that sell our resale stores for clothing?
I would say that the main thing is the curation, and we really are thinking about collectors who are in the market for very specific items and will pay a premium for them. And there are other stores that do similar curation, but we are definitely pretty dialed in, and we have a real niche that we are going for.
Great. I'm going to want an example of that in just a minute. But for the moment, this is The Ground Floor on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm your host, Cynthia Scher, and I'm speaking with Tim Kiesling, who is the co-owner of Acid Castles Vintage in Ashland. So give me an example of like how you distinguish yourselves just even locally with the curation of what you carry in your store.
The first thing is that we are very strict about our definition of vintage. We don't really take anything that was made after the year 2000, except for very specific styles of skateboarding and rave kind of wear. But beyond that, it is definitely 90s and back. And we are looking for items that really are wearable in the everyday, which is hard to come by. So things like Carhartt jackets and American workwear are something that we specialize in that are not like, you know, a 30s or 40s dress that is very cool, but not, you know, usable.
Mm-hmm. Because it looks too costumey most of the time.
Yeah, or it's just incredibly fragile, right. Very expensive, very formal looking, something right. That you might wear to a gala, but not as an everyday part right. Of your wardrobe.
So what's the most, what was the most interesting or lucrative find over your career of curating vintage?
One of my favorite finds was in Ashland, and it was a Chrome Hearts leather jacket that I bought from a store downtown for, I think, right around $100. And I think that's another thing that differentiates us from other stores is that we know a lot and can place things in the right context. So I found this $100 jacket, and it had sterling silver hardware on, you know, the pull tab is for the zipper is sterling silver. All of the rivets are sterling silver. And I ended up selling it to a Japanese man for about $2,000.
Holy cow. Well, those are great margins, but not everything has like is an $800 t-shirt or a several thousand dollar jacket where you can mark something up that much. So how do you kind of project how you're going to maintain some kind of margin in vintage? Or do you have a threshold for that? Do you have, when you buy something, do you know you have to at least make, you know, 2X, 4X what you paid for it?
Yeah, we try to stay around 3X what we paid for something. For particularly high-end items, we will go a little bit higher. And for lower-end items, we'll obviously pay less, but around 3x is about where we like to be.
And how does a collector from Japan find you? You know, your Acid Castle's vintage in Ashland, Oregon. You find this jacket that you know is really valuable, but it takes the right person to sell it to. How do they find you?
Often through Instagram, online, and there are also Japanese buyers who essentially drive up and down the West Coast and just stop at every vintage store. And if you have the right stuff, I mean, that can be a huge payday.
That was one of the things I was wondering, is you're right off I-5 practically. Do people go on, you know, shopping tours up and down I-5, and do they have a list of vintage stores they should stop at, or they just Google them and find them?
Yeah, I think increasingly people are making kind of specifically vintage-oriented trips, and we do have a lot of people already who are just pulling off of I-5 and stopping to see us.
Huh, that's great. That's great. So you get a reputation then as a destination store, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah, the reputation is building.
Yeah, great. So I know in my closet, there's a lot of things that are more than 20 years old. Not that I shouldn't clean out my closet more often, but for other people who might have maybe some interesting things in their closets, do you buy, do you just source from people walking in?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a lot of really cool stuff that just walks in the door, which is a win-win for everyone because we get something cool and we also pay them very fairly for it. So if you have vintage items, please bring them by.
Okay. All right. And where are you located?
We are located at 1604 Ashland Street, and we're open Tuesday through Sunday, 11 to 7.
Okay. Well, you may be inundated with people's treasures that we hope can be, you know, turned into something exciting for somebody's wardrobe or collection, at least. When you were working with the store in Puget Sound, did you pick up on what their business model was and what made them successful?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the curation was a huge part of that. And also just the price point. They, I would say, are a little bit below kind of online pricing, which makes a huge difference. And that's also where we try to be.
Uh-huh. So what do you mean online pricing? Where are people looking for things? eBay and
Sites
like that? Or?
Yeah, eBay, Etsy. Those are two of the biggest online vintage markets. And we try to be around 15 to 20% less than what things are selling for on eBay.
Mm-hmm. And that works with your, you know, I, if I can sell it for 3X, then I can still keep it a little bit less than
absolutely
what the market
and,
is.
Also, there are fees associated with online selling and shipping, which is, you know, also costs money. So we really end up making about the same profit margin selling something in person as opposed to posting on eBay and having 15% get eaten up by fees and shipping.
Right. That makes total sense. So as you, you just started grand opening. Do you have grand visions for what's next for Acid Castles? I mean, you're just up and running, so that's probably a premature question, but give me a sense.
Yeah, we've got big plans. We're already thinking about a second location somewhere else in the valley. We're thinking about events. We've already had our second Saturday last month. That was great. A ton of fun, bands, food, pop-up vendors. And we intend to do another one of those in October. So look out for that. And yeah, lots coming down the pipeline.
Great. Well, I bet people are going to want to go in and see what kind of treasures they can find and what appeals to them in the way they do vintage, because everybody seems to have a slightly different look around that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We look forward to seeing them.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you so much, Cynthia.
You've been listening to The Ground Floor, JPR's regional business podcast. I'm Cynthia Scherr, and you can find this program and more on our website at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'd like to remind our audience that we're in the midst of our fall fund drive. We're currently at $5,739, a strong start towards our goal of $120,000. You can help us reach the finish line by calling 888-552-6191 or visiting ijpr.org/support.